The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says not enough governments make full use of tobacco taxes to dissuade people from smoking. In a report released today titled The Global Tobacco Epidemic 2015, the United Nations Health Agency says that one person dies from tobacco-related disease every 6 seconds or so, equivalent to about 6 million people a year. That number is forecast to rise to more than 8 million people a year by the year 2030 unless strong measures are taken to control what the WHO calls a tobacco epidemic. We will discuss tobacco and smoking on the program today. And joining us in the studio, it's a pleasure to have our guest, Joshua Kialo. He's Africa Program Director for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Mr. Kialo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lina, for having me.
It's good to have you with us. And let me remind our listeners that you can send us your questions or comments at healthchat@voenews.com or email us at or post them on facebook.com/healthchat. And we will start discussing tobacco and smoking in a moment. But first, Voice of America's Carol Pearson has this report about the difficulties of quitting smoking.
It's no secret that any type of tobacco use is not healthy. But for most people, it's hard to quit. That's because most of them started the habit as teenagers and because tobacco contains nicotine.
Nicotine is a highly addictive, very powerful drug.
Dr. Kimberly Horn says teens are likely to use more than one form of tobacco. It could be cigarettes, small cigars, or smokeless tobacco. And teens who smoke are likely to use electronic cigarettes, which also deliver nicotine.
The more nicotine that I get, the more addicted I am, the more difficult it is for me to quit.
There is no one technique for quitting that works for everyone. Some turn to e-cigarettes for help. Cece is hoping electronic cigarettes can help her kick the habit.
After many years of smoking, I really don't like the smell of smoke. I don't like the mess of cigarette butts. I don't like the taste that it leaves in my mouth. And I don't like the fact that other people are going to be bothered by the tobacco smoke.
Studies show electronic devices can work for some people, but not for others. Behavioral therapy and medicine, gum and patches that reduce nicotine cravings might help. Dr. Nancy Rigotti and other researchers designed a simple program to help smokers quit while they were in the hospital and stay smoke-free after they were discharged. Patients were given a nicotine patch or medication and counseling in the hospital with follow-up support after they left.
We know that medication works and that counseling works, but they both together work much better than either one alone.
70% of smokers in that program were still smoke-free 6 months after leaving the hospital. The U.S. government and private organizations have been running anti-smoking campaigns since 1964. A study from the Yale School of Public Health found that those who quit during this time period had a 30% improvement in life expectancy. Dr. Theodore Holford is one of the co-authors. He and others who study tobacco use have this advice.
Someone who's considering smoking should not consider it ever.
Both studies were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Joshua Kialo, again, thank you so much for joining us in the studio. Now, we heard this report about the difficulties of quitting smoking. So let me have your reaction as someone who works in this industry. What is your take on it?
Absolutely. Thanks, Lino. Carol made a very good point that tobacco in all its form and shape, we talk about the smoked tobacco as well as the smokeless tobacco, any product is a deadly product. It is addictive. Mm-hmm. And that's how the tobacco industry manufactures a cigarette, to make it extremely addictive And all they need to do is get children or young people, say in the ages of 18 or around that age, hooked onto smoking. And they know the moment that happens, the effort to quit is a painful, slow one. So they have pretty much, from their perspective, customers for life. And the work that we do, therefore, is to address, primarily address the, prevent the initiation into smoking.
And we're definitely going to talk about the work that you do. And this leads me to my next question then. When we look at the whole issue about smoking, is the emphasis, should the priority be on preventing new smokers or trying to help those who already smoke to quit?
I think the World Health Organization Framework Convention on Tobacco Control has very specific measures for tobacco use prevention control. And the, among those include, first of all, you want to be sure that you are dealing with the public. From a public health perspective, the one of the measures is making sure that there are laws in place that are compliant with the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. Within that law, you need to have 100% smoke-free public places, indoor, so that you prevent exposure to secondhand smoke. That's number one. Number two, you want to have graphic health warnings on cigarette packs. When people say, I have a right to smoke, we also say, well, the government has a responsibility to warn you as a citizen of the consequences of taking to smoking. So graphic health warnings are very important on cigarette packs. The third one is total ban or comprehensive ban on tobacco advertising, promotion, sponsorship, making sure that the tobacco industry is not trying to market to young people, market to the public, their deadly products. And at the same time, we also want to make sure that the policies that are put in place are protecting government efforts to put in place measures from the tobacco industry. Tobacco industry is absolutely dangerous in that respect. But on the issue of quitting smoking, I think there are cessation programs. These are probably mostly clinically done. And the World Health Organization sees all those measures as combined measures. But at the end of it all, what you want to do is to prevent people from starting to smoke, because it's the starting to smoke that leads to addiction. Once people are addicted, you are now dealing with a problem that could have been prevented. So prevention, as I say, in Africa is better than cure. And that's where Africa is when you compare Africa, the Africa region, with the rest of the world, we are seeing greater smoking rates, death rates in more other parts of the world. But those countries are also taking measures. Africa prevalence rates are still relatively low. So we have a very small window of opportunity to put in place measures that will prevent an epidemic. And I think that's what the World Health Organization is talking about.
So let me have you perhaps expand a little more on the picture in Africa, the big picture in terms of smoking. You just mentioned it. Can you just make us understand a little better what the status is in Africa? Where's the smoker, the chain smoker? Is this the youth, as your organization focuses on the youth, or is it adult, woman, men? What's the big picture?
Excellent question, Lino. I think we're seeing a combination of things. First of all, men, based on statistics that we have, smoke higher than women. That's what we have currently as a data. Okay. Compared to the rest of the world, the smoking rates are in the 10 to 11% on average across Africa. If you compare that to China, for example, which is one of the highest smoking countries with the most deadly burden of disease from tobacco use, that looks relatively small. But at the same time, what we're also seeing, and I give you the example of Kenya, is the tobacco industry in its marketing strategy is beginning to target women and young people. Over the years, they have made smoking look quote-unquote cool. They made it look very sexy, very attractive, and very appealing. And they make it look very glamorous. So they do that to target women, make it look very fashionable. Mm-hmm. We're also seeing them coming up with very sophisticated methods of targeting young people.
What are some of the examples?
advertising, for example.
Okay.
And as laws are put in place to prevent tobacco advertising, promotion and sponsorship, they're resulting to, for example, social corporate responsibility, what they call that. In some countries, you've seen them sponsoring sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing them sponsoring, football. It's one of the most popular events on the continent.
Yes.
But in so doing, the advertising, it's a hidden form of advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
And we have example of countries where the tobacco industry, in fact, has parties that with young people, and when they go to these parties, they are given cigarettes a form of entertainment. So this is two sort of approaches that we are trying to make sure that within the law that are put in place by governments, the public is totally protected. But to go back to your primary question, Lino, in terms of the smoking rates, yes, the highest rates are among men at the moment. We're seeing rising rates among women.
Mm-hmm.
It's been greater, higher among boys. But a couple of years ago, trends in Kenya showed that girls are actually more, getting more and more initiated into smoking. And we're saying, therefore, that the time to act overall to protect the public, to protect the ages that we care most about, is now. And we are particularly concerned. We're concerned about the general public, but we are particularly concerned about young people because the industry knows initiation ages are as low as in some countries, 13, 14. Some countries could be lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concern for us. We're also concerned about poor people because, of course, when heads of families in a household take to smoking, that's a very expensive enterprise. And it means that a father who is smoking is not only exposing his wife and his children to the deadly consequences of tobacco use, but is also taking revenue and resources from families. For food, for shelter, for basic livelihoods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the consequences of tobacco use. Just looking at the health consequences, we hear a lot about, lung diseases and everything, but if you can just go over that for us.
Yes. I think the first thing to say is we say tobacco is the only product that you can use as prescribed by the manufacturer, the tobacco industry.
Mm-hmm.
And will either kill you or cause disease or cause disability. Tobacco use kills at least 50% of its lifetime users.
Hmm.
In the 20th century, tobacco killed 100 million people. If we don't act now, by 2030, in the 21st century, let's say, tobacco will kill 1 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about that figure.
Yes.
Now, the science is very clear on the deadly consequences of tobacco use. It's a product that affects a human body from the shreds of the hair to the toes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the biggest issues we are concerned about, of course, is around heart disease, lung disease,
mm-hmm.
or forms of cancers resulting from tobacco use. And therefore, when you look at the science of it, there is overwhelming evidence, beginning from the United States of America across the whole world, that there is no real value in tobacco use. It kills, causes disability and disease. And the world actually recognized that
mm-hmm.
when the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control was the WHO, the only international health treaty ever in history. When it was enacted and ratified by now over 180 countries around the world, which is more than 90% of the world's population.
Yeah.
It was based on science. It was based on the recognition that this is a deadly product and increasingly its toll on human health is absolutely overwhelming. And if nothing is done now, mm-hmm. over time, it will kill more people. Now, put this in perspective in the context of Africa. Over the last several, decades, Africa has struggled with what we've called the infectious diseases.
Yeah.
HIV, AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, name it. Mm-hmm. That's what has ruptured our healthcare system, has overwhelmed our healthcare workers, has really made life very, very difficult for the African continent. Most of our human resources and health financial resources on the African continent have gone into fighting these infectious diseases. Now, this is where the issue gets even more tricky. Tobacco use, from evidence we have, kills far more people than HIV/AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, road accidents, homicide combined.
Really?
Absolutely. That's based on absolute scientific data. And people have not, especially in Africa, because that's exactly the reaction. When I speak to policymakers in Africa, speak to ministers of health, and I do, and I say to them, they tell me, well, we haven't really given tobacco control major attention because we have other issues we're dealing with. I say, what issues are you dealing with? And they mention the ones I've just talked about.
Yes.
And I say, but has it occurred to you that, in fact, tobacco use globally kills far more people than all those issues you care about combined?
People don't realize that. I think there needs to be more emphasis.
Exactly. And that's what we are fighting on. But the health, the scientific aspect, the science behind tobacco control is very clear from all corners of the world. And my final message, then I can go to the next question you have. My final message to the African continent particularly is, given where Africa has been with all the infectious diseases, we do not have the luxury to wait for yet another epidemic. We've dealt with infectious diseases. We've seen what that has done to their human and financial resources. We cannot wait for another time. The time to act is now, and we have an unprecedented opportunity in history to curb an epidemic before it takes a toll on our population on the continent.
We don't need another epidemic, that's
Absolutely.
For sure. So thank you so much for joining us. And we have to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. We are discussing smoking and tobacco today with our guest, Joshua Kyalo. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The World Health Organization has called for urgent assistance for the West African subregion that is just recovering from Ebola crisis, saying it needs to rebuild its health facilities to guide against possible future occurrence. The existing facilities need a complete overhaul, and many new structures need to be built. To rebuild their health systems and provide services from now through the end of December 2017, a sizable investment in the health systems is needed to provide basic services and increase the life expectancy of populations that have suffered greatly as a result of this disease. Many developing countries still lack the infrastructure to dispense drugs against neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, with up to $300 million a year needed to address this. Neglected tropical diseases comprise various conditions that are prevalent in poor countries around the equator, but receive little international attention due to their limited spread. Uniting to combat NTDs, the coalition behind the report aims to control or eliminate 10 NTDs by 2020 through vector control, better disease management, and improved sanitation. A clinical trial of a new investigational vaccine designed to protect against West Nile virus infection will be sponsored by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the National Institutes of Health. The new vaccine is being tested in a phase 1 clinical trial at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. In preclinical studies, the test vaccine was effective at protecting mice against a lethal dose of West Nile virus. This clinical trial will test the safety of the vaccine, as well as its ability to produce an immune response. It will include the enrollment of 50 healthy men and women ages 18 to 50 years, who will be followed for 14 months. For Health Chat, I'm Damisi Fowley.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on the program is tobacco and smoking. Our guest is Joshua Kyalo, Africa Program Director for the campaign for tobacco-free kids, rather. Now, I have questions that we collected from Facebook, and we have Cynthia Okere in Nigeria. She's asking, how does tobacco use affect the economy?
Well, excellent question, Cynthia. And by the way, Cynthia, your government in Nigeria just passed a tobacco control law. So hopefully the government can implement that and protect the public. But when you look at the amount of money that the government uses to address the cancers that we've talked about, the heart diseases, what we talked about, the lung diseases that we talked about, and all the other diseases that are resulting from tobacco use, the effect on the economy of the country is huge. From government revenue investment in the public health sector, that's number one. Number two, of course, the tobacco initiation targets young people. So because of the consequences, the deadly consequences of tobacco use, the biggest population that is affected are the most productive people in the society, the life earners for most families.
Yeah.
And so we're saying over time it's either killing or causing huge disease burden on the most productive sector. And that is a huge economic impact on the country. Mm-hmm. The third one, of course, is people that use smoke, mostly are going to be young people or some of the poorest in our societies. And therefore, if a head of a household is investing the meager income that they have into buying cigarettes and other smoke products. Mm-hmm. Of course, what are they doing? They're taking away resources that could take care of children in terms of education, healthcare, and basic family needs. That's a huge dent on the economy. And when you look at all that from the data and analysis that we have done, the revenue that governments take from the tobacco companies is not enough to address the health burden that results from the deadly use of tobacco products.
So there has to be some type of balance there.
Really, we are saying that there has to be. The government has to really, and we'll come back to discuss the issue of tobacco taxes when the right time is right.
Which is my next question, actually. So let me jump to that question. With the WHO's report released today about the need to increase tobacco taxes as a way to effectively control tobacco use, let me have your reaction.
Absolutely. No, I think we at the Campaign for Tobacco Free Kids are fully behind the WHO resounding call to governments around the world to increase tobacco taxes. It has very specific benefits, what I call a win-win for any government. Increasing tobacco taxes has the advantage of driving down the tobacco consumption, especially among young people and among the poor. As you increase tobacco taxes, you increase prices, and makes it a lot harder for young people and poor people that we, you know, in the society to afford cigarettes. That's number one. Number two, you are able to then prevent death and disease. Mm-hmm. You're saving lives in so doing. And of course, it's a very easy measure to implement. It is easy to do that because the government gets revenue. It's able to use that money then to invest if it needed in the public health sector as well. So it's the most efficient, cost-effective way of addressing tobacco use and saving lives and death and disease.
Okay. Now, Patrick Kwesi in Ghana, Accra, has this question. What causes children to start smoking?
Well, Patrick, that's a great question. Again, I've just come from Ghana these last few days. And, Patrick, you should ask your government. The tobacco control regulations are now going to Parliament. And you should ask your government, the Parliament, to make sure that they adopt the tobacco regulations, begin implementation. The reason why young or children take to smoking, there are several things. One, let's take the case where a parent is smoking and they're exposing their children to secondhand smoke. Mm-hmm. By example, that's one. But the most deadly aspect is just the tactics of the tobacco industry, the tobacco companies. In Ghana, for example, Patrick, you have the British American Tobacco. They've been in the continent for 100 years. Mm-hmm. It's a century, I think. Mm-hmm. And you've got Philip Morris International in the western part of Africa. What they do is to find very sophisticated methods of marketing to children. Because that's what they target. They want to be sure that children can see these glamorous images of smoking, make it look cool, make it look enticing. But the point is, as soon as they're initiated into smoking, they get addicted. It becomes a near lifetime addiction. And that's what the industry is doing. So the one way we can make sure we are protecting our children is basically passing laws that protect them from secondhand exposure to smoking, make sure that they don't have access to tobacco products, and stop the tobacco industry from marketing to young people and to children.
So this was not just an attempt to
to especially expose these two companies, but it was a way to show examples as to what is being done to attract these children into smoking. So when you look at the landscape on the ground in Africa and the youth smoking in Africa, what can you tell us in terms of an effective way that they can be deterred or at least convinced not to start smoking, or for those who already smoke to stop?
They're very specific measures. It's an excellent question, Lino. Number one, I think when I look at the African continent, we got 46 sub-Saharan countries. I think 47 are that we have South Sudan as an independent nation. And out of the 47 nations, 43 have ratified the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which means that the majority of African countries recognize how deadly this product is. Mm-hmm. What we are saying, one practical way to do this is for the African governments to implement laws that domesticate the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. That's practical to protect children, protect the population. Within that, there are five key things we always encourage governments to do. Make sure that the law that they pass at the country level as 100% smoke-free environments in the public space, indoor. Two, make sure that the cigarette packs have got graphic health warnings of at least about 65% or above to warn the public of the deadly consequences of tobacco use, including children. Yeah. Three, coming back to the issue of young people and children, is to make sure that you have comprehensive ban on tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. Stop the tobacco industry from targeting young people and population. That's how they do it.
Yes.
Stop them from making it cool to smoke. Mm-hmm. This is what they try to do. Mm-hmm. The fourth measure is making sure that you have tobacco taxes. Mm-hmm. When we're asking governments, which is what the WHO report says, is that for every government on the continent, especially in Africa, raise tobacco taxes, retail prices are up to 75%, generate revenue, protect health, protect public health, and promote the lifestyle of the African nation. And the fifth most important measure, again, is to make sure that within the laws, there are very tight controls in terms of the way the tobacco companies interact with policymakers to safeguard the space that governments have to put in place effective measures. When you take all those measures in totality, as a campaign for tobacco-free kids from experience around the world, we believe that those will protect children, protect the public, and save nations and lives.
So before we wrap up, when you look at the way forward, what can you tell us in terms of what needs to be emphasized? I know you talked about five ways that could be effective in addressing smoking among children, but the big picture, adult and children alike, when it comes to the issue of smoking?
I think the big picture is that, number one, the science of it is very clear to the public. And I think you're doing a fantastic job at the Voice of America.
Thank you.
We must applaud you this one way. Get the message out that we're dealing with a deadly, addictive product. Tobacco kills, causes disease and disability. That message needs to get out there. Mm-hmm. Secondly, governments need to put in place the obligation they have to put in place strong measures and laws to protect the public. Thirdly, parents have a responsibility as parents over their own children to make sure that they can protect them from initiation into smoking, but also to call upon governments to put in place laws that protect their children and the public in general. And fourthly, I think we are seeing a momentum growing up in Africa with the tobacco industry is targeting Africa as its primary marketing base. They have lost ground in the rest of the world.
Yes.
And we're seeing governments need to wake up to this and really put in pressure and also in place measures that will stop the tobacco industry from marketing in Africa and using Africa as its last final cigarette marketing dumping ground.
Well, Joshua Kialu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lina, for having me.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. For more on today's subject and the campaign for tobacco-free kids, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. And thank you all for joining us. And thanks to our guest, Joshua Kialu, Africa Program Director for the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. My name is Lenore Mudu in Washington, D.C. with producer Jackson Mbanganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.